It is Saturday, December 19th, 2009. 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, a lot of geek news, and then in the second half, your questions and comments about technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks, Miles Elam, Slacker, and Political Junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
And Mr. Al Luckow, a new media architect living in Ben Lomond, California.
Hello, everybody.
But you're not in Ben Lomond right now. You're in Santa Cruz.
I am here.
Beautiful Santa Cruz, California. And Al, we're going to start with you, and it's been too long. We need to have some robots.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, let's start off. As far as robots helping people, and now, of course, all these things I'm going to mention are happening in Japan.
Well, we did say it was robots, so.
Yeah, they just really are robot crazy over there. There's a robot called RoboVee. And it's designed to help lost shoppers. Okay, and what this thing does, it's an Osaka-based Advanced Telecommunications Research Institute project. And what it does is they developed a crowd-monitoring humanoid robot that recognizes when people are lost and then goes and tries to help them find their way. So it has 16 cameras, 6 laser range finders, 9 RFID tag readers. It can watch up to 50 people at a time.
How does it know if someone's lost? Does it like read their thoughts?
I guess.
What do we do when we're lost? I stick my hands on my face and scream.
I usually crawl up into a fetal position on the ground.
So that's what the robot looks
scream.
For.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to go to the fetal position, but I'm usually quiet. It's a quiet whimper.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it probably has those algorithms programmed into it.
So I would assume, in all seriousness, that this robot looks at people, tracks them, and if they change directions more than like a couple times within a few minutes, they assume that you're lost.
Yeah, it monitors a 100 square meter section of the Universal City Walk in the Osaka Shopping Center.
Interesting.
You know, I've never been there, but I have been to Japan.
So if you
usually there's like a trillion people in a place like that, so I don't know how they do it.
I think you're exaggerating.
Well, there's, it's more huge. Than 10 and less than a trillion.
When did you go to Japan?
I went a few years ago. Went to the Akihabara with cool. Waz. Bought toys. But so there's another robot also in Japan. And this one, it's designed to help senior citizens go to the supermarket. And this one's called the RoboVee2. And it's by the Japan's Advanced Telecommunications Research Institute International, mm-hmm. or ATR. And it's deployed in a supermarket. And this thing will, you walk up to it, and then the senior citizen has help, picking up melons. And it even talks to you and suggests, things.
So it really is an assistant.
Yeah. And the YouTube, I think it's a YouTube, it's a video that of the whole thing that we've got posted. Yeah. That we'll have posted on the website. It's all in Japanese, so I don't really know what it's saying, but it's saying something. Yeah. And they say underneath that you bought butter, you should buy bread, it's just another vehicle for, trying to get people to buy more stuff. Having your personal shopping robot assistant.
I mean, having somebody help you in the grocery store makes sense, but does it have to be synthetic?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little weird. There are people that help you shop. I've never had it. Like Macy's, isn't there like a shopping assistant? Like when you're really rich or something, you go there and you tell them what you want and they kind of walk.
Like in Pretty Woman.
Is that where I saw it?
Well, yeah, that's where they do it. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's
she
where
gets
I saw
help
it, yeah.
from people.
Yeah. Right, yeah. right. There's also a couple other things. There's
right. You're doing like a mashup, a robot
yeah,
mashup.
Yeah, this is a robot mashup. Right. You know, this one is robot doppelganger. And if, for those of you who don't know what a doppelganger is, it's a duplicate of yourself. What this is featured by the department store, also in Japan, the department store called Sogo in Cebu, and they're planning to sell two humanoid robots, custom built to look like the people who purchased them. Okay,
so you send them pictures and stuff, and well, they create an artificial.
These things are pretty
you?
Pretty expensive. Okay, they're like for, I mean, they're a lot of money. Like $200,000.
Yeah, but if you have to go to like a, you know, a family event that you don't want to go to, you could send this instead.
Yeah, like so that movie we saw.
Which movie?
Remember we went and saw that movie?
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. With Bruce Willis. Was it Surrogate. Bruce?
Surrogate, yeah. Which I thought was good and you didn't think was so good. I did think it was good. But anyway, this robot is life-sized and they showed an example of one next to somebody. It basically is you exactly.
And it's me or it's them.
It was the guy that okay. was demonstrating. It was him.
Good.
And this is a sort of a scary kind of thought to think that you can buy some robot that's the life size of you and is looks like you. And, you know, it might be good for like if you work in a cubicle, though.
Yeah, definitely. Because you know, then they could just sit there and you could actually be working at home. People think you're in the office.
If you could get it to yawn.
Yeah.
You know,
and talk on the phone loud.
You know. Yeah. But and then the final a really great use of robots I came across is robot synchronized. There's a synchronized robot Christmas dance. And that's worth watching. it's all these little mini robots. And they play some Christmas music and then they all do like it looks like synchronized swimming. Their arms go up and they just bzz, you know, they're all doing their thing. And so that's a little YouTube thing we'll have posted up there, which is finally a good use of this non-threatening robot synchronized dancing.
So all these robot stories are now live up on our website.
And they are right on, by the way.
They are right on, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so all the synchronized robots.
Yeah, they are very synchronized.
To wrap up, you got Japanese robot helps out with grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Robot droid helps lost shoppers at a mall.
Mm-hmm.
Robot doppelgangers for sale,
yep.
but for a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then synchronized robot Christmas dancing.
Right. There we have
Thank you for the robot update. I really appreciate that. I've been lacking my artifice.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's been going on. We just have to keep track of it.
Thank you, Al. Miles, your first news story for the day. Can we talk about the lack of evidence for cell phone damages, please?
Oh, I think you just did.
There. Now,
one of the problems has always been, do we have enough people that we're studying? Is it a good sample of the population? Right. How long is the study being run for? Because cancers usually take a while, like decades to show up.
We kind of jumped the gun. I jumped the gun because of the intro. Sorry. So what you're talking about is this perception that cell phones can cause brain tumors. And,
right. But the thing is, most of the studies are these shorter term, smaller demographics. And, well, what about this? What
Not
about
conclusive.
This? Right. Well, one of the advantages to single payer healthcare is that you have access to the entire population in terms of their medical history at a glance. And you don't have to worry about, well, if someone is sick and doesn't have insurance and doesn't show up, that everyone can get it in the Scandinavian countries. And that's where they focus this study.
One-payer healthcare of Scandinavia. Okay.
Right.
I thought we'd missed something this week.
No. So we're talking about Finland, Sweden, Norway. Mm-hmm. So with this large 30-year study, they checked to see and they started gathering data with regard to cell phone use when cell phones started being used, which is around 30 years ago.
And they know who had cell phones because they put in that phone number in their medical records?
Well, there's a lot better information later on
when
they started
When they really started studying it, yeah.
Right. But they also were trying to follow, like, well, have the brain cancers increased over that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't.
Okay. So 30 years, Scandinavia, they have found no correlation and therefore no causation, of course, because there's no correlation. So meaning that there's not more brain tumors for people that have cell phones. There's not even more tumors in general, even though cell phones have started to be used.
Right. They did find a certain type of a type of glioma, but it was not... It wasn't tied to cell phones at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
This is good because I've been wanting to get a cell phone hat with like five cell phones on it. So now I can.
Of course, we want to think about the whole confirmation bias stuff we talked about. Like,
is it true
that Norwegians eat a lot of fish?
From what I hear, yes.
And they don't have brain cancer.
Now, one thing I do want...
That's right. It might be just because they have fish.
Who knows? Yeah. They eat a lot of...
Scandinavia and you have a cell phone, you're safe.
I have a friend from Sweden, and he eats a lot of...
Who's your friend from Sweden?
Roger.
Yeah, I met Roger. Yeah. You know, somebody recently told me that they knew Roger, too. It was
really?
An exciting experience, yeah.
Well, he eats a lot of dill. Dill? Like every time he eats...
Like the seasoning?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And also a kind of fish. Is it herring? Or there's some kind of fish that he eats a lot of. It's really salty.
I know a British guy that eats a lot of
fish. And they eat a lot of that stuff. Mm. You know, and they say fish has oils in it that like are good for you and all that. So
That's true.
You think maybe, you know, these people are not getting brain tumors because of that. But who knows? Maybe.
So in any case, anybody in Scandinavia that has a cell phone or doesn't has no difference between brain cancer in the last 30 years. That is a very good study. I mean, that's a very good data set to know.
Right.
Thank
16
you.
Million people. It's not and it's not even just like, oh, this section.
Right.
It's the entire region. And when they did see that small steady increase in gliomas, that increase started in 1974 before mobile phones were in common usage, before they really existed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And also for folks that are thinking, oh, well, we have these smartphones now that are checking the internet, and what are all these effects that that's going to have? Cell phones have actually decreased the amount of energy they transmit.
Right. It's getting better.
Over the years.
All right.
So the early cell phones, if they were dangerous, would have been more dangerous than the ones we have today. And because of the length of time, we can see the old ones weren't dangerous. So at least
speaking of things that are old and dangerous, Al, would you like to tell us about a science kit?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Let's see. You know, it's Christmas time, and you go out and you think, well, I'm going to buy my kids this little electronic kit. And it's sort of educational.
I love
you go to the Discovery store, and you get in this. Well, this isn't really a new thing. People were buying stuff like this in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And I ran across this neat little toy, which is a collector's item now. I wouldn't particularly want to collect it, but it's called the Gilbert U-238 Atomic Energy Lab.
the pictures of this are priceless.
Fantastic. You got to see this on Geek Speak.
I'll put it up right now.
It's got this little 50s looking boy, you know, holding this kit with like little atoms flying around. It came out in between 1950 and 1951. It performs over 150 exciting experiments.
So what's in the kit? It has a name of U-238.
Well, obviously, uranium 238. Yeah.
Well, the set came with four types of uranium ore. A beta alpha source, PB210, a pure beta source, RU106, a gamma source, ZN65, and a spintheroscope, a cloud chamber with its own short-lived alpha source, PO210, an electroscope, a Geiger counter, a manual, and a comic book.
Look, Mom, I'm radioactive.
And a government manual, prospecting for uranium.
A comic book.
The alpha and the beta emitter is not, so it's the alpha ones unless you're eating it, so I don't know if that's going to be an issue. I really wonder about those gamma emitters, like wondering.
I really got to say that this is not something you want to give a child.
It says in the, there's a little scan of the manual. And it says radioactive source replacement. You know, because when you use up all the radiation or you lose it or you accidentally swallow it or something. The radioactive sources in your Gilbert Atomic Energy Lab will, in a period ranging from 1 to 50 years, deteriorate with time. Therefore, when replacement of your alpha, beta, gamma, or cloud chamber source is required, fill in the coupon below and send it to the AC Gilbert Company.
Can you still do that?
That'd be funny. I always wonder about these old ads. You know, does that place actually exist?
Right.
But man, you know, buying, you know, uranium and
it's great.
Wait, if uranium 238's in there, that's not 50 years depleting.
Well, at the time,
that's like a $4.5 billion.
I mean, they obviously made obviously the toy is flawed.
Yeah.
I mean, we know now that this is not a good thing to give kids.
Uranium 238, actually, because it has such a long half-life, it's actually safer. Longer the half-life, usually the safer the item is. Mm-hmm. The ones that have a half-life of a week that you have to worry about.
Right. They wouldn't use because it wouldn't be marketable.
Well, this was, you know, the 50s, and they were
so
doing
things.
So this
is probably more dangerous than cell phones.
I would say that it's less useful and more dangerous. But, you know, at that time, you know, we were talking before the show about, you know, I'd mentioned that I had a friend whose mom had her face exposed to radiation for as an acne treatment.
Sure.
And you had said something about...
they used to have this in places you can buy shoes, they'd have like an x-ray machine on the floor. And you could stick your foot in it and push a button and it would go... And you'd see through your shoe and your foot where your bones fit and whether it would fit. And you could just go in there and put your hands in there
just
and
put
play
your face right down there and
no
just...
problem. Take a look at things.
And then Miles mentioned the...
The radium watches back in World War II. So
the
you had these factories.
Yeah,
yeah. You had the paint. So, you know, it glowed in the dark. And they had... during the war, I forget, a lot of women making these items. And even though the manufacturer knew that this stuff was toxic, it knew that it was radioactive, they still recommended to the women working on the line that they dip or tap the brush on their tongue to moisten it to keep the paint going. They didn't provide sponges, you know, which wouldn't have been a big deal. But so, yeah.
So I think in a lot of ways, I mean, just it's like, this stuff was all really dangerous and it was all right there and we were all using, and now we have new knowledge and obviously we don't do these things that I know of. But
actually, I wonder about that atomic energy kit where I'm seeing the picture of it. I wonder if the heavy metal toxicity actually outweighs the radioactivity.
Probably, at the time, though, this kit was $50. So that's
an expensive kit.
Yeah, and now, of course, it's a big collector's item. If
probably
you can,
goes more than $50.
Oh, yeah, hundred times that price. But, wow, you know.
Yeah, but according to this, it's been over 50 years. It's inert.
Well, yeah, if you read the directions, really.
Actually, you know, it might be a lot less dangerous. Of course, that's only this half-life, so.
Man. That assumes also his daughter products aren't worse than the source.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I remember this. I mean, I had a chem set in the 80s, I think, that had lead and mercury in it. You know, you'd play with mercury. I remember broken thermometers. I'd put it in a little container and play with mercury. You know,
Why do I have such good memories of mercury? Thinking
I think I have more bad memories. I mean, I think I have more good memories of mercury, but
it was a fun stuff to play with, but now, of course, you don't want to do that.
The thing is, in its liquid form, I don't even know how dangerous it is. We should really ask Dr. Don, because I used to put it in my hands and play with it. I love that stuff. I want my kids to play with it.
Yeah. You know?
But I don't let them play with it. I just put it in their cereal.
Especially as a kid,
don't do that.
Don't do that.
That probably explains how.
Please do not do this at home.
Why I'm so stupid.
And actually, they don't put mercury in thermometers anymore.
No, they don't. They use an alcohol mix, which is really the red stuff is actually just an alcohol mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of sucks. I like the mercury. It's
fun. Was neat, but it's over, so don't try it because it's not going to work.
Don't use it. It's not good.
Get one of these atomic energy.
I'm going to ask Dr. Don actually how dangerous that really is to have it in your hand. Like, you know, should I have some kind of test or something?
Yeah.
And it's really funny. We come in every week after Geek Speak, after Dawn, to start the show, and we listen to some of it, only parts of it. And this week, up on the screen, a list from Charlie, who answers the phones for Dawn. It just says, red yeast rice, ! It's like a big yelling at me, red yeast rice. I have no idea what they're talking about. But anyway, I'll have to look at Dr. Dawn. So last week, Miles was covering a story about TCP/IP and about some analyzation from an analyst that was talking about whether there's
analysis,
really
analysis, I think, analyst. Is the word you're looking for.
No, I was talking about an analyst who looked at the documentation.
You said analyzation. That's what I was.
He's creating words.
I like making
words.
We're
innovative here.
It's all the mercury.
I have my degree now.
It's all the mercury I had as a kid.
That mercury is showing now.
Analyzation nation. Anyway, last week Miles said,
TCP/IP by its design would limit the...
Wait a second.
Except that...
It looked like you plugged everything in right.
I did plug everything in right.
I saw you plug everything in right in front
Most
of me.
Fail.
Wires all over the place in here.
My city laptop. Ooh, that sounded good.
I think that worked.
Let's hear.
TCP/IP by its design would limit the ability of a bandwidth hog to take down the network by using up all the space. Yeah.
So Jim Warner, who happens to be the network guru at UCSC, friend of mine, he listens to the show. Thanks, Jim, for listening to the show. One of five people, I think, that listens to the show. And he said that actually, Miles, what's going on is that the TCP/IP protocol, every connection is shared, you know.
Right. As you put it, balanced. It's not per user, it's per connection.
Right. And that a lot of these sharing applications, the sharing point-to-point
protocols. Open hundreds of connections.
So you and I are balanced on the same network. We're doing great. We're searching web pages in our browser, maybe opening three or four connections a piece, and it's really balanced. Then I start sharing the greatest video I made of my dog, walking in circles, and it's really huge, and everybody on the internet loves it. And so I actually, in my sharing thing, I have like 150 connections. So then every one of my connections is the same as one of your connections, and I'm 30 times more use than you.
Yes. But in my defense, one thing I didn't bring up last time was that ISPs have different times where the bandwidth is in greater usage or not.
Yes.
And they always, let's say they have a gigabit link to the internet, just throwing out a number.
Okay, they have a gigabit link to the internet.
Okay. Then they always have that. Doesn't matter if it's 4 o'clock in the morning or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And different times of the day and different days of the week are going to have peaks and troughs.
Right.
But whenever they talk about bandwidth hogs, it's like, well, but when are they hogging? Or could they also tell the bandwidth hogs, hey, could you only – because they're likely going to be the most technically savvy individuals. Say, hey, could you download this on Thursday nights?
Now, let me ask you, wouldn't it be nice if there is a way to do this all automated where I, as a user, could have some of my applications be at a lower priority and some of the stuff have a higher priority and a bandwidth shaping at the ISP? So the ISP says, well, every home definitely gets, 15 connections, then we're going to give it as fast as we can. And then depending on our network envelope and how much data we're using, you can open up more connections, but kind of watch what our feed is.
Yeah, and like, there
have
are,
it analyzed that
yeah,
way.
There is traffic shaping software anyway. You don't have to look at the protocol. You can just say how much.
Right, but one of the problems, of course, is that at a software version from my one machine, if I've got my browser opening a few connections, I want it to open up like 15 connections per website because then you get really fast response. But
usually doesn't open up 15 per.
It will open up multiple connections though.
Yeah, but usually on the order of like 4.
Okay, so 4 connections. I mean, you don't want to have the over – well, in any case.
Well, it depends on the browser, 4 to 10.
Yeah,
sure.
Depends. In any case, you want that to be functioning really well, and then you want the point to the sharing stuff to be, of course, less mm-hmm. so.
You know, I have a comment as long as we're picking on Miles.
Yeah, I love picking on Miles.
He said last week that they had this survey where, children were asked who's smarter, their mother or their father.
Yeah.
And it was always the father. Well, I did that test, and my kids seemed unanimously agreed my wife is smarter than me.
Mm-hmm. So, first of all,
my wife is smarter than I am.
There you go. But proof in the pudding right here. Now both of you believe that, too.
I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
Now we believe it.
So, anyway, but I think your study was like from a long time ago, they were saying.
It was a recent study. It was not that long ago, but it was a tendency. It was not an absolute.
So then what you're saying is that she really is smarter than me?
You go with that.
Oh, well, they're right anyway. So,
yeah.
Oh, come on. We love you.
As long as my kids aren't smarter than me yet, that's fine.
They will be.
And I don't know. Does Alexander need to be smart?
My 4-year-old may be smarter than me. Not my 7-year-old. I'm at least third. So.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Miles Elam and Al Luckow, and we are covering the Week in Geek News, but we're also taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800, and that is in the 831 area code. Or you can call us toll-free anywhere, from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada and so on. 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Now, we do also have a few thousand, 10,000, something like that, podcast listeners. And if you'd like to ask us questions, you want to do it on air, please do so by make a recording and sending us a link to that recording. And you can send us and ask us questions, of course, at geekspeak.org 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, except for that small percentage when the server is not up. Whose turn is it to talk about what we're doing?
I think you just finished with the atomic. So.
Wow, really? That was a long discussion. All right, so no, then we did the correction. All right, yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. So, Miles, let's let you talk about Netflix. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Netflix, there was something called the Netflix Prize. It was a $1 million prize if someone could find an algorithm that was 10% faster than the algorithm Netflix currently uses to find out whether or not you would, you know, recommendations, whether you would like a movie or not, what would be on your queue, which things to present to you with a priority.
How much was the?
$1 million.
The $1 million?
Yeah.
To do what? What
if
was
you
this?
Could find an algorithm that beat their algorithm by 10%.
What do we waste? Why are we here? No, we should be doing this.
The competition is over. It's already been got. And, you know, their algorithm was really good. It took people a while. Only two groups actually beat it.
Wow.
Were able to beat the threshold. But one of the issues with it was for people to work with the algorithm, they needed to have a corpus of data. And that corpus, one of the things about it is you want to have it be realistic. So in other words, have what people are actually using, what Netflix actually has. But you don't want it to have the information about individual users. You want it to be anonymized.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately for Netflix and for a woman who was in the closet as a lesbian who was outed, she's seeking $2,500 in damages for the fact that she feels that she has been outed by this Netflix
Because of what she listens to?
No. Because the data that was supposed to be anonymized had a bit more personal information than...
like who she lived
with. She would have liked. No, it was actually reveals a person's zip code, their birth date, their gender. And then you have all the information about what they chose.
Oh, but with the birth date and their gender and their zip code, you pretty much know who the person is.
You can narrow it down to just those Netflix customers within that zip code and then narrow down to
really
what
not that hard to do. Well, the thing is, I mean, is that data collected someplace? Like if I wanted to find out who, you know,
should be just
95005, a 42-year-old male, was that it?
It should be just be the year they were born, not their date. I mean, you couldn't.
I know. If they just took away the month and day, that would
work better.
Because
then you couldn't. I mean, there's plenty of people.
Yeah. Interesting. So is she winning, or we don't know yet?
Well, no. The lawsuit just began.
Okay.
So we'll see how that goes.
$2,500 is not anonymized enough, and we know that that's not good enough. I mean, you don't want a birth date in there. That's too.
Well,
you actually.
That's the thing, though. The data was important to the competition. That is important salient data.
Right.
A person's name isn't, their social security number isn't, but this data is useful for trying to predict. Now, the question is, because right now the U.S. doesn't really have strong electronic privacy laws.
Right.
Compared to the rest of the developed world, we're pretty free for all.
Well, we have freedom. Sorry.
So it does raise some interesting questions of should this be allowed? Like how much is too much? What happens? Because if you restrict, for example, the zip code, then you lose a lot of demographic data that, you know, hurts the ability for that competition to be useful. Like it probably wouldn't have been able to beat the Netflix algorithm. It probably would have been a moot point. The competition couldn't have happened. So that raises that question of should the competition be allowed to happen? That's what this lawsuit is basically asking.
It doesn't seem like that much money. $2,500? I mean, that's like it costs more than that to like go to court. And that's where
I'm sorry. The suit seeks more than $2,500 in damages for each of more than 2 million Netflix customers.
I'd say that's substantially more.
Yes. Yeah, that's more.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for that. I want to suggest a podcast for the week. I didn't do that during the break. I normally do. And the one I want to suggest is for families and for kids and for everybody. It's awesome. It's called the They Might Be Giants Friday Night Family Podcast. And it's a video podcast by They Might Be Giants, one of my favorite bands. And my kids watch it all the time. Have your kids started watching this yet, Al?
They haven't watched it, but I'm very familiar with – we have all the – They Might Be Giants.
The music.
Kids music.
Right. So this is the music of They Might Be Giants for kids, done with great puppets that introduce them. The John and Johns, the two lead players, have puppets that they manage. And then they go through these great animated pieces of all these songs that you know from that CDs.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful stuff. I'm going to go ahead and play a little bit right now with Dick.
They do a lot of science-based music. Like they'll talk about science things. In their music.
Yeah, they do.
we go. Watch us go. This is two heads of puppets. See?
Oh wow,
it's great.
No, I don't think
you do.
Audience, you're in the air. Yeah.
In any case, I love that podcast, and that, of course, is up on the GeekSpeak website.
Yeah, they were giants. Is great. I remember in college learning some animal physiology from them from the song Mammal, one of my favorites from the Apollo 18 album.
They also have, I think they're the ones that do the song Alphabet of Nations. They basically use,
yes,
they do name nations for every letter of the alphabet. Well, of course, there is no X.
There's no X?
There's no X.
There's no
nation.
Country with an X.
There's no country that starts with an X.
Well, some former country name. They
call,
use that.
No, they say xylophone.
Oh, that's cheating.
I know.
Well, there's X Rhodesia, which is known as Zimbabwe. No. Bad joke.
All right. We've got to have some calls. We have tons of calls. Let's take some calls, shall we?
Okay.
I need some intro music, Miles. Want to sing something? All right, never
mind. Mammal.
All right, moving on.
Call, she raise a paw.
From Santa Cruz, Hal, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning. I just a couple weeks ago bought a new ThinkPad. I know you guys won't approve, with Windows 7 on it.
ThinkPads are great machines.
Yeah.
It's Windows 7, hey, ThinkPad, it's not as bad as we thought it was.
But I sent it back. And they gave me a full refund, and I ordered one with an XP Pro downgrade.
Why?
Windows 7 is not ready for prime time.
What trouble did you have with it?
It wouldn't even support an external monitor.
Cool. Well, they say Miles had just mentioned that they said that Windows 7 isn't as bad as you think it is.
Yeah.
Right? That
was the review?
Yeah, that seems odd to me. That
No, the external monitor, that doesn't make any sense at all. This machine was shipped with 7, and you couldn't connect a monitor can you connect it to the new machine?
Oh, I not only was able to connect it, but it was clearly connected and did such a good job on the machine that then I couldn't see either screen.
Yeah, that's a selection thing. I see.
Although, you know, he's right about XP, though. XP was a solid Windows,
if a bit virus-ridden, but, you know.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I went through two different lengthy tech support
sure.
calls. The second one said they'd have the service people call me. The service people called. The first guy finally agreed to escalate to a higher-level guy. We had a long talk, and the guy said, I never installed Vista on anything. I will never install Windows 7 on anything. XP Pro is exactly what you just said. It's it's well worked out.
Yeah.
It's stable, and that's it.
I wish I didn't have to upgrade. I have a Windows machine.
But the fact that you just bought a brand new laptop and it had Windows 7 on it, that is not a failure of Windows 7. That's a failure of IBM. That's my personal opinion.
IBM shouldn't have put it on hardware.
You're onto something because apparently Lenovo did its own version of Windows 7.
Yeah. Well, and, OEMs normally do that.
And the ThinkVantage tools, which are normally quite good, were really the source of the problem. But I'll tell you, I turned on automatic updates.
Yeah.
I actually bought two of these. They were almost twins, one for my assistant, one for my wife. Sent them both back, and they're giving me a full refund. But it was
And they both had the same problem.
It was steadily downloading updates. It just didn't stop.
Hal, do they both have the same problem with the external monitor?
Yep.
Yeah, that's definitely a problem with, and we say IBM because IBM actually owns Lenovo, but I believe still.
They split it off.
The other way around. Lenovo contracts with IBM in North America.
Sorry, IBM. Didn't mean to besmirch your good public name.
In any case, I think that's good information. Thank you. So XP more stable.
That Windows 7 is being super hyped by Lenovo on their site and some of the other partners that Microsoft has. And I'm not sure exactly why they've all gone for it, but it's not ready. Yeah, I usually don't buy something. I'm not an early adopter. I wait until these things get worked out. I was convinced by the hype. My bad.
Yeah. Well, compared to Vista, I'd say, go to Windows 7.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you completely you know, bypass both
of
them.
Yeah, if that's your choice. But my wife has already downgraded from Vista to XP Pro.
Yeah, no.
You know, I mean.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Hal, for the suggestion.
Okay.
Bye. All right. Bye-bye. You know, I was using XP a lot this week because I'm setting up a new printer, a laser cutter, actually, at work, and I've got to run it on a Windows machine, so I've been using XP Pro, and it's great. But one thing I noticed is, I had to get it on the network to share some stuff, so I had to get all the virus protection software running. And it's the version that of software that I grabbed, that, you know, it at one point popped up a warning saying, there's one threat and 45 infections detected. Clean this. Mm. I'm like, whoa, that's really weird. I thought I turned everything on. That shouldn't have happened. So I looked through it, and what do you think the 43 infections were, Miles?
Various cookies from web browsing?
That's it, just cookies. Cookies are not infections. It's so frustrating to me that that's the language that's out there. To be really clear, a cookie is just something that you're saving for a website you visited so that they
can be used for tracking. It could be used...
It can be used for tracking, yeah. But it's kind of difficult to do that, and the data you're going to get is not very interesting. And the way it works on tracking has to do with... We've talked about this before in the past, but... If Al and Miles and I all have a website and amazing blogs that we write about really cool things, which we don't, by the way, and you visit all of us, and on each of our websites we had an image that went to some other server, some, you know, creepy GeekSpeak server, and from there it was just serving one image, we would know with a cookie set on that that you were the same visitor going to each of our pages. That's the information you could get with cookies. That's it. And it is used to some degrees for, you know, that kind of thing, but it's not an infection. In any way,
saying an infection is far too inflammatory.
It is akin to if you visit me and I give you a business card and I say, every time you see me, show me this card, that's what it's like. And the problem is that sometimes when I'm next to Miles and I'm next to Al as well, I'm always going, hey, show me your card, show me your card. But that's what it is, okay? So it's not an infection.
you know, it's funny. You mentioned we don't write blogs and you know, there's this one thing. We all were doing internet stuff. We've been doing it for so long. I mean, I remember doing stuff in the late 90s, you know, posting pictures and writing stuff and posting. Mm-hmm. And we were all doing all this stuff. We just didn't call it blogging.
Right.
You know, we were doing it. And then all of a sudden this blogging comes out and everybody's like, oh, did you hear about blogging? And I was like, wow, what's that? You know, and
it's updating like your website.
And then it's your own personal website.
Yeah.
Really.
With your own pictures. You can put a picture. And I just thought... What am I missing? And there's this big sensation, and it goes across the whole, you know, world, and everybody's doing this thing that we were all doing already.
Really cheap content management systems. That's
we
all
just didn't call it blogging.
Right.
Well, we knew what weblogs. Yeah. I mean, I thought of weblogs, you know, like...
Right. Well, that's what it really came from, the terminology.
But the weblog is really a data file of everybody's...
That reminds me, Lyle, how did you learn HTML?
By looking at view source.
Right, exactly. Like when we learned how to make web pages, there weren't any books on it yet.
No. I mean, there was Grease Monkey. Grease Monkey had some... Was it? No, was it,
no it was Monkey something.
Web Monkey.
Web Monkey. Yeah. Web Monkey had some, like, tutorial kind of stuff, which was kind of fun. But no, I just did it all by...
BB Edit.
You know, in the place you'd find the most amazing things you could do with a web browser? Porn sites. So you go up to an internet
just
porn
research.
Site.
Just
like,
research.
Wait, how are they doing that animation? You'd look, animated GIF. What's an animated GIF? And then you'd have to look at, figure out how to make one. And mm-hmm. Yeah. Really cool stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, but I'm very autodidactic. I have no degree, unlike you two. Let's go to Scott in Las Vegas. Welcome, Scott, to GeekSpeak.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My daughter is wanting an iTouch for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And due to the economic situations, we can't afford one.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend of ours gave us a first-generation iPhone. And we don't wish to set it up as a phone. We just want to use it as an iTouch.
You have an iTouch, then?
Well,
you don't, because it's
first of
in.
All, it started off wanting a SIM card, and I couldn't get past anything without having the SIM card. So I called Apple, and I says, what can I do to get around that? And they didn't have any suggestions. I says, well, I have an old singular phone with a SIM card in it. Can I just stick that in there without hurting it? Yeah, give it a try. So I did. So the you don't have a SIM card symbol went away, but now it wants me, when I plug it in, it wants me to go through the iTunes situation of activating my iPhone with AT&T.
So,
and I can't get past that.
Yeah. Miles?
Sounds like you want a jailbreak, and I can understand why Apple wouldn't want to tell you that.
Okay.
Apple wants you to buy an iTouch, of course. What we're talking about is cracking the phone. You're basically running an application. It's actually relatively simple to do if you download the application. You are basically infringing on the Millennium Copyright Act if you do that, though, because there is encryption protocols in place that don't want you to do that, and therefore breaking those protocols, kind of, you'd be breaking the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Wouldn't you say, Miles?
Yeah, but it's...
Not something that GeekSpeak recommends. It's definitely not something that KOSP recommends. And I don't think anyone's going to care. So,
well, I'm not trying to be malicious.
Right. What you want to do is you want to jailbreak your phone, and there's applications to do that.
Look, this is with Windows, by the way.
You don't want to just jailbreak. You also want to unlock.
Right.
Because you want it to be able to be used on any carrier, including
a... Yeah, the terminology that the hacking community has used around this, or the cracking community has used around this, is that if you jailbreak an iPhone, you're still using it on an AT&T network in the U.S., and you're just allowing yourself to run other applications that are not signed by Apple. Things like having a flashlight that goes brighter than anything else, so the screen can go brighter than Apple would restrict you to do that.
For a while, it was allowing
accessing
tethering.
The GPS information in different ways, tethering sometimes, so that means you can connect your computer to it. The other thing is unlocking unlocking it means that you'd use it on a different cell phone network. You need to do that even though you don't want to add it on the cell phone. You need to do the unlock because iTunes is not going to recognize it as a valid phone because you have a SIM card from another network.
Mm-hmm.
So there you look.
So really what you're looking for is unlocking a tool that unlocks. It doesn't sound like you care about the jailbreak.
Well, the jailbreak is going to be necessary for the unlock, I think.
You got to do one and then the other.
I think you're going to do jailbreak and then unlock, but I could be wrong. Because you have to get a different BIOS on there.
Yeah, it's...
And
there's information online on how to do it.
Go in and use their software to load it.
Yep.
I generally don't buy music online. I usually just rip it.
It will work through iTunes after you've done this.
Really?
Yeah, it just requires a bit more legwork, though.
And when iTunes says, new update available, don't do that, because you'll have to go through this whole process again.
Oh, I've heard about that, yes. Actually.
And you are investing some serious time in doing this. You know, this is going to take a good part of a day to make sure it works. Or you're going to get really lucky and it's going to take an hour. But in general...
Or I can win the lottery and get her an iTunes.
Yeah, you might want to just... I mean, this is up to you, of course, whether you want to do it or not. We have development at UCSC. I work at UCSC, and we develop apps on the iPhone, and iTouch as part of the research of the art program. And we had a phone like this given to us, but we didn't have a SIM card in it, and we decided not to use it because the development tools were good enough without it, so we haven't been using it so far.
Or there's another route I just realized.
Yes.
You could always put it up on some online ad agency like Craigslist, something like that. Sell the iPhone. You get about the same amount of money that an iPod Touch costs, and because someone else will want to be able to do something with maybe want to use it on the AT&T network legally.
Who knows?
Or even just get a Nano, because, you know, Nano's play video. Nano.
I think it's a Nano. Nano.
Get a Nano, and you can shoot video with it.
She
you
wants
can watch
the touch,
and...
though. She wants the internet, browse the internet.
Oh, we want to do the Wi-Fi.
So you want the Wi-Fi. Okay, so that's...
Yeah, I think Miles' suggestions are really good ones. Sell this one, buy a new one. You might come out ahead.
Yeah, the only thing you'd lose, though, is you'd lose the camera.
The other thing that the iPhone has... That the iTouch doesn't, or maybe the new Touch does, it has an external speaker so you can listen to it loud, right? You can listen to it as a group. The iTouch didn't, the first generation iTouch at least, didn't have a speaker, so you'd have to plug in a headphone, so you couldn't listen to it as a group. And watching YouTubes together on an iPhone is really fun, you know. Miles and I do it for about 20 hours a day, so. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, I was afraid that was the road I was going to go down.
Are you really calling from Las Vegas?
Yes.
Wow. So you listen to us online, I'm assuming.
Yeah, what I normally do is I grab your podcast.
Right.
And I listen to it on Mondays.
Assuming
I've been digging around with this phone for a couple of days, and I'm not, unfortunately, I'm Apple deprived.
You can do all this on Windows.
Okay. And I don't know my way around the iTunes that well. I don't know my way around the iPhone at all.
Yeah. There's nothing. Once you pick it up, that's the 15 minutes.
I have lots of friends that have these things.
Yeah. Well. All right. Good luck, Scott.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Let's go ahead and go to a next call. This one from, we've lost Ed. We'll go to, we got Ed back maybe. From Paso Robles. Ed, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you. I'm looking for some suggestions. I'm starting up on Linux. And any suggestions for antivirus and firewalls?
Yeah, use Linux.
For all intents and purposes.
As also a Windows user, I'm paranoid.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, there are no viruses for Linux. It's not to say they are not possible, but they simply don't exist right now. So any virus software you put onto it would be more of a feel-good measure rather than actually useful.
Kind of like wearing a tinfoil hat doesn't do anything. But it's a little, probably a little more useful than that. The other thing is, we're up firewalls. Linux built-ins have firewalls, so you really don't need to worry about that. You can enable it. What is it called? Depends on the distro. The distribution.
It's Ubuntu.
Ubuntu. You don't worry about it. You made a decision that causes you to be in a space where you really don't have to worry about viruses.
Okay.
Congratulations.
I'm going to use as my basic distro. Is that the correct?
Yeah, distribution. Yeah, mm-hmm. Distro.
And then on top of that, I'm going to put the new virtual deal from Sun, where you can run almost unlimited OSs virtually, including Windows and even going back to DOS.
Right. Okay, so VirtualBox, that's the one from Sun, very good piece of software. Bear in mind that if you run Windows inside of that VirtualBox, then you will need antivirus in that
for Windows.
Box. Yeah.
Yeah, I realize that. Yeah. I don't plan to connect to the internet through that.
Right. Well, it sounds like a good idea. What you're going to also want to do is VirtualBox is going to make images of OSs. So install your OS and make it all working great, and then make a copy of that image, and then use your Windows OS as you will, and allow it to have viruses, who cares, and then just erase it and get your copy that doesn't have viruses and run it again. Like, that's the idea of a destructive and non-using, you know, non-keeping OS is a pretty cool way of doing it if you want to be all nice and geeky. All right?
I would never want to be a geek.
Why not? We're it's too late. You're everything.
You're installing Linux. It's too late.
Yeah, way too late.
You know what Linux is. It's already too late.
Welcome.
Talk to you later, Ed. Bye. All right, so we also have an Ed from Santa Cruz. Hello, Ed from Santa Cruz. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. What's up?
I just got a new Motorola Android,
mm-hmm.
or the Droid, or whatever it's called, and I'm wondering, is there a way to listen to KUSP in real time on that, cell phone?
You can call the phone number you put on hold.
Is what I've been doing.
Let's see, the Android. Yeah, the Android's got apps that you can do streaming, no problem. I'm sure of it.
Can't you just go to a browser and click on our live feed?
Yeah, it should work.
I did, but it won't download it. It says something about the download size is unknown and cannot download that.
Well, that means the Android phone's not supporting streaming. That's strange. You did use the MP3 link and not the real link that's still... up.
No,
the
I didn't.
MP3 link. Huh. And did you try
this? He said he didn't.
I didn't try the MP3. I tried the, what they give you, 128K and two other choices.
Yeah, you tried
one of those. Tried the middle one.
Yeah, that's an MP3 stream. That should have worked. That's really strange to me.
Yeah, check the Android store. There's going to be an app for it. I don't know if NPR has released an app for it yet. I'm only familiar with the mobile apps for the iPhone. But it seems to me that one should be forthcoming.
From NPR?
Because we're an NPR affiliate, they will be lumped in with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can listen to, on an iPhone, they have an NPR app that you can listen to live NPR feeds and stuff. So
right, and we're on there.
It would fall to reason that Android would have one at some point if they don't already have it.
Yeah, or look for something that's a public radio.
I'm really surprised the live MP3 stream doesn't work right from our website. That means there's something wonky with the browser. Take a look at other browsers on the App Store as well to see if there's another one that would work. The other thing is, try the lowest bandwidth first and see how that functions. Good luck.
Try what?
Try the lowest bandwidth link from our site. I think we have a 24 kilobit link as well. And then try the highest. Just try all three of those MP3 links. One of them should work. I'm surprised that it's not working for you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
But he won't hear all the subtle variations of our musical voices if he's at 24K.
That's true. My voice comes across really nice at 192, actually.
Yeah.
Actually, I like a straight wave file. Did we talk about that last week? Not mattering, especially for voice.
Right.
Couple things. We are going to be changing the theme song for GeekSpeak starting January 1. And the reason for this is that I want to make the GeekSpeak content free to everybody. I don't want to have any kind of restrictions on it. And I want to Creative Commons it so that anybody can use the show for different purposes depending on the license I pick. And the reason we haven't been able to do that for our podcast is we have this wonderful music in the front of the show that we don't have rights to distribute for free to everybody. So that means that January 1, new theme song for the entire show. If you care that much, what you can do is just take an older show of ours and take the front theme song off and edit it together with the new show that we'll have in January, and then you'll be set. You still get the music. And the music that we use is Through Being Cool by who is that?
Devo.
Love the song. Listening to it for 9 years. It's time for something else. We'll be working what that is. And for a while, it might be nothing. It might be silence.
We do have something.
We do have stuff.
Yeah.
We have lots of choices.
Yeah.
And then the whole show will be Creative Commons at that point, which will be fun. Let's see. And we'll probably start off the show with a Creative Commons show, just so you know what that is. That's a cool thing we geeks do sometimes. We're not going to be taking any more calls today. We are going to be doing Al's USB of the Week. He's got it live this week. It's really exciting. I'm excited, at least.
I'm nervous.
You are?
Well, no. But
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KOSP.org. Al, what's the crazy USB of the week today?
Well, it's by Brando. Brando's like a company that has a website that offers a lot of USB crazy stuff. This is the USB wristband battery. It's this giant battery that it's way bigger than a watch. You know, here it is. You know, it basically wraps around your wrist, and it supplies power to the USB device you're using. You know, could be a, you know, little game or something like that, or yeah, you're playing. And it's says it's bulky. It's got a bunch of LED things on it. It's 256 by 34 by 12 millimeter dimensions. But it's really amazingly a big. It looks like you just got out of prison, and this should be in your ankle, and you wear it
you
on your
wear
wrist.
Wear two of these, and you can work out.
Well, you do end up with like one arm much stronger than the other. So anyhow, the USB Brando USB wristband battery.
Thank you, Al. My name's Lyle Troxell, and we'll be here next week, as we are every week.